Leviticus 14. I will be reading the first 9 verses. That's where we will begin this morning. Leviticus 14, verses 1 through 9. And as we do this, I want to encourage you, each of you, as we continue through the book of Leviticus. Many times we will not be reading the entire chapter. It becomes quite long, and not that I'm shying away from the public reading of the Scriptures, but for the sake of time, I would encourage that you do this on your own. So, obviously, for next week, have Leviticus 15 read. We will be going a chapter a week. Leviticus 14, verses 1 through 9. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This shall be the law of the leprous person for the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go out of the camp, and the priest shall look. Then if the case of leprous disease is healed in the leprous person, the priest shall command them to take for him who is to be cleansed 2 live clean birds, and cedar wood, and scarlet yarn, and hyssop. And the priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthenware vessel over fresh water. He shall take the live bird with the cedar wood and the scarlet yarn and the hyssop, and dip them and the live bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. And he shall sprinkle it 7 times on him who is to be cleansed of the leprous disease. Then he shall pronounce him clean and shall let the living bird go into the open field. And he who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and bathe himself in water, and he shall be clean. And after that he may come into the camp, but live outside his tent 7 days. And on the 7th day he shall shave off all his hair from his head, his beard, and his eyebrows. He shall shave off all his hair, and then he shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and he shall be clean." What did we see last week? This is a continuation. I guess it was last week. Was that less than 2 weeks ago? Okay. Weeks are running together. It's not a good sign. But nonetheless, a few weeks ago, we read from and studied from Leviticus 13. And what did we see there? What was the gist of that passage?
Leprosy.
Exactly. Leprosy, and
that it involved the whole body.
It involves the whole body. So if we sense, if you're in the camp of Israel, okay. Now, what's important here is that what's the context and where is the location we're speaking of here? This is important. Because if we get that wrong, it's rather confusing. If you think we're in what city, it's confusing. If you think you're in Jerusalem, it's confusing. They're in the wilderness, okay? So when we're talking about the camp, remember we're talking about a mobile camp that is moving through the wilderness with what in the center? The tabernacle, as opposed to, of course, the permanent temple. So this is the context that's very important that we're talking about here. So that wherever they're in the wilderness, and they are in the midst of the wilderness, so that to be removed from the camp is to be put into the wilderness, okay, in the middle of nowhere, literally. And we saw a few weeks ago that if somebody has leprous disease, they are to be what? They're removed outside the camp. This is very important. Isabella and Elijah came home Sunday, and I know Dev and Suzanne are probably laughing, and they had Band-Aids on them, and they were telling me about how they were leprous and the whole bit. And I said, "Who told you that?" And they said, "Well, Mr. Dub and Miss Suzanne." And they were studying leprosy, so that was rather cute. They really got a kick out of that, and I think it hit home to them. They didn't want their Band-Aids off that night, but that was a battle, but thank you. But anyway, we saw that when they were leprous, even if the individual himself or the disease was not a result of sin, they were to be removed. Now, why was that? What is that demonstrating? Exactly. You're caring for the community. It's the greater good of the community. This is something that, again, the Western mind today doesn't quite grasp. I've said this many times, and it's important. The Eastern context, and some Western cultures, certainly in the Greek culture this was the case, but the good of the community is superior to that of the individual. Here in our Western culture, we elevate the individual rights over and against the rights of the community. We do, and that's really foreign to the Scriptures. This is why when we go to the Scriptures, and so many Americans, I think particularly, and I know I have, we're ingrained with individual rights. We are endowed with our Creator with certain individual unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I mean, this is our existence as Americans. We are individuals first. Not so here. Remember, it's the good of the community that is being spoken of here. It's interesting that we saw in the sermon this past week about Christ dying for the community, this for the church. So we see the fulfillment of this in the church, and that what is to be removed outside of the camp? Sin. And this is how it points to Christ, and ultimately it points to Christ. Why? Exactly. He hung on the cross outside the camp. Very important that we see this. And what does Caiaphas say, who was high priest that year? And it's because he was high priest that he was enabled to say this. Exactly. It's better for one man to die for the whole nation. I mean, this is again, a significant thing that we see throughout the Scriptures is the good of the community. But what we have here in chapter 14 is something a little... It's a continuation of chapter 13. And what is it? What did we just read about? Leprosy? And the skin disease. But what about it? Exactly. The healing of it, okay? And the cleansing of it. Now, what's important here, and you see it in your notes, this is very, very important, that never in the Old Testament do we see, and I know of no cases where we see anywhere, where the priest will do what to a leprous person? Touch, but ultimately, heal him. It's not the priest's job to heal anyone. What's the priest's job?
Inspect.
That's it. This is one of the things that is going to set Israel apart from other nations. We read in other nations that there are exorcisms. We read in other nations that there are forms of witchcraft and voodoo and magic, as we would call it today, whereby it is believed that the individual would be healed. Okay? But here in Israel, there was a keen sense with anything that was leprous that what? This is very important for understanding these passages. A keen sense that if you got the disease, there was what? It was sin, but there was absolutely what? No cure. There was nothing you could do. This was important. Now, why would that be important?
They had to look outside themselves.
Absolutely. Had to look outside themselves. So that when someone was healed, it was truly what?
Miracles,
an act of God. And there are cases here, there's provision for the individual who is declared unclean, is removed, and then is once again to be cleansed. And when they do, we're going to see them come back into the camp, and the steps for readmitting them into the community is rather interesting. And if you turn to your second page of your notes, you will see here that the events are you're probably seeing something, those who understand Leviticus, you're seeing a powerful parallel here, which is significant. Okay? I'm going to pick up in verse 1, and I'm going to go down, and we're going to go verse by verse here in these first 9 verses, and I want you to see some things. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "This shall be the law of the leprous person for the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go out of the camp, and the priest shall look. Then, if the case of leprous disease is healed in the leprous person, the priest shall command them to take for him who is to be cleansed 2 live clean birds and a cedar wood and scarlet yarn and hyssop." What's the role of the priest here? It's important. Yes, but what's he doing here in verse 2? "This is the law of the leprous person for the day of cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall go out of the camp." Okay, the priest is going out of the camp to inspect him here. Okay? The priest is going out to the individual. And what is to happen when the person is deemed clean? In verse 5, "And the priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthenware vessel over fresh water." How many birds do we have? We have 2 birds, okay? 2 birds. And this is there's a parallel here. In our minds, what should the parallel be?
Day of Atonement,
the goats here. Remember, and you will remember, I've taught before, but we're going to see it here in several weeks, about a month or so, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, there are two goats that are selected. Here it's two birds. Now, typically in the Old Testament, in the Levitical system, why was a bird used as opposed to a goat? For the poor. This is for the poor, the people who can't afford something else. So in this case, why would in this case then birds be used? These are leprous people. They don't have anything, okay? They have nothing. But we still see here that still, what is the Lord doing? The person can do what to cleanse himself? Nothing. Okay, this is, and what's the name of the Lord? The Lord will provide. We see it at Mount Moriah. Who's the one providing the sacrifice here? It's the Lord, okay? People can't even provide, likely, these birds because they're outside the camp, okay? And the Lord is going to provide still the sacrifice here. Two birds. Again, the reason birds as opposed to a goat in this case is these are lepers outside the camp. These are outcasts for every sense of the word. And what's going to happen to one of them? What's going to die? Okay. Remember two goats at the Day of Atonement. One is designated for Azazel. The other one for the Lord. One is the scapegoat, and the other is still for the Lord. So one will be used as to appease the wrath of God for the propitiation. In other words, that goat will have the hands of the priest laid upon him, the sins confessed, and then what will happen? The throat is slit, okay? The throat is slit so that the blood drains. The blood drains and the Lord's wrath is appeased. This is propitiation. And then with the second goat, what happens? Yeah, well, in the second goat, yes. Well, here in the bird, it's the bird sacrificial ritual here is slightly different. But with the goat, you're going to see that the sins are placed upon the head. And what's that goat? What happens to that goat? It's cast outside the camp, just like this leper was. Okay? But here we see that the first bird, you see in verse 5, and the priest shall command them to kill one of the birds in an earthenware vessel over fresh water. And then in verse 6, and he shall take the live bird with the cedar wood and the scarlet yarn and the hyssop and dip them and the live bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. Now this is a very strange ritual because of the way that it's being conducted here. But what is it reminiscent of? And I can assure you that the Israelites here would have been remembering. What's that? Yeah, absolutely. I think definitely the Exodus and what's happened that right before the Seder meal. You're killing the lamb, then you're going to eat the lamb, but what are you doing with the lamb? You're taking what? Blood, but what are you using? Hyssop. Okay, exactly. And so this is no doubt. Why would the Lord then use hyssop, even when it doesn't seem to be a direct parallel? What's it doing for the people? It's making them do what? Think and remember and recall. Now, I've said many times, and this may sound like it stands in direct contrast to what I preached on the past couple of weeks, that leaving what's behind and pressing forward, but what's the point of remembering?
To know where you've been.
Exactly. I would say that the reason that we remember is not, I've really thought of this. I think it was Brian that introduced me to that future grace and that concept in that book, and I picked it up, and it's still something I'm wrestling with, which I like. I'm not completely sold, but I'm pretty close. John Piper says that the reason we do what we do as Christians is not out of gratitude. And what he means by that is I don't look back and say, oh, I owe the Lord something. I am indebted to Him for what He's done for me, and I am so grateful that I am going to act in such a way that in some way pays Him back for what He's done. That is not the motive that we are to act out of the motive we're to act as Christians. Rather, what Piper says is that it is, even if we do look back and see what the Lord's done for us, it's faith in future grace. It's knowing that the future is in His hands, and it's faith in God and obedience in Him that causes us to act in an obedient manner. Okay? And so it is here, we look back and we see what He's done, that the Lord has the past, the present, and the future in His hands. But I'm going to look back, and I'm grateful. No doubt I act out of gratitude. But ultimately, it's because I saw what he did for me in the past that I have faith that the future is in his hands. And so my faith is in him and in that future grace that I know that he will bestow upon me. We're coming up on, of course, Easter. This week is Palm Sunday, and then we have Resurrection Sunday. And this idea of resurrection, I'm going to be preaching on that. And the idea of a bodily resurrection. Most Christians, I would submit, have no concept of a bodily resurrection and what that means for us in the future. We think that all the resurrection, I think many Christians think that only, what did the resurrection do for us? It secures our salvation, and it in some way causes us to be with Christ after we die, but it's so much more. It's something in the future that we have to look forward to. It's our hope that we'll be resurrected like him. And so we look back to his death, his burial, his resurrection, just as the Israelites are here with the use of hyssop and blood and sacrifice are going to recall the Exodus, so that as they are in the wilderness, they know that the Lord will eventually take them where? To the promised land. Very important that we see that. I am the Lord who brought you up out of Egypt, as what they're no doubt recalling here, as they use the cedar wood, the scarlet yarn, and the hyssop, and they dip the live bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. Verse 7, and he shall sprinkle it 7 times on him who is to be cleansed of the leprous disease. What is the cleansing agent here?
Blood.
It's blood. Okay? Blood is the cleansing agent. The Lord has his wrath, so to speak, in a very real sense, has been appeased, and he's sprinkling the blood on the individual. Now, what is this reminiscent of? Remember back to sacrificial system. The sacrifice of the whole burnt offering as well as the sin offering especially, what do they do with the blood? They sprinkle it on the altar 7 times. We're going to see that actually in the Day of Atonement, but we see it on the furniture too, is cleansed through the sprinkling of the blood 7 times. Okay, so we see patterns here that are reminiscent that God has ordained this in such a way, certainly that it's consistent with the sacrificial system. And then after he sprinkles it 7 times, then he shall pronounce him clean, and he shall let the living bird go into the open field. So what do we have a picture of here? Freedom, certainly. There's a picture of freedom there.
The sin's going away.
And what do we call this?
Expiation.
This is that removal of sin from us. Okay, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, because not only has the wrath of God been appeased, but the sin has been removed from us. And so this bird is flying off into the open field in verse 8. And he who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and bathe himself in water, and he shall be clean. And after that, he may come into the camp, but live outside his tent 7 days. Now this is interesting. And on the 7th day, he shall shave off all his hair from his head, his beard, and his eyebrows. He shall shave off all his hair, and then he shall wash his clothes and bathe his body in water, and he shall be clean. So there's a 2-step process for readmittance into the camp. He's unclean. The priest examines him. So we're going to kill one bird, dip the other bird in there, let the bird fly off. You're welcome to come back in, and you've got to shave your head and all of that. And you can live in the camp. But you can't live where? In your own tent. Okay? You have 7 days. Okay? And 7 days, on the 7th day, then you shave your head once again, the little stub, I suppose, that's grown, and shave your eyebrows. This is absolutely beautiful, I think. Absolutely beautiful picture here. Why? I'm going to ask you. I don't think I have it in the notes. It's like a newborn baby. It absolutely is. Why? He's a what now? How does this point to think Christ? He's a new person. He's a new what? Creation in Christ. 7 days, always think what?
Perfection
and what else do we see at the very beginning? Absolute creation. He's a new creature. And he's like a newborn baby who's been born. He's been reborn. He was a sinner. He was an outcast. He was to be outside of the camp. And then he was brought back in through the blood of the sacrifice. And now he shaves his head to be reminiscent of Ty over there. And how precious is that? Oh. Get a little... Oh. Anyway. Love the little babies around here. It's reminiscent of a baby. It's what it is. And so that's exactly what's happened. It's a new creature in Christ. And this person is going to be outside of his home for 7 days, and now he's readmitted. And he's readmitted how? As a full, you know, full-blown citizen, so to speak. He's fully in. The old has gone, and the new has come. He's going to wash his clothes. There's that symbolic cleansing. And now look what happens in verse 10. And on the eighth day, he shall take 2 male lambs without blemish and 1 ewe lamb a year old without blemish and a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil and 1 log of oil. And he goes on and on and on and on about these sacrifices. What are they doing? What's he doing now? Read on in verse 12. And the priest shall take 1 of the male lambs, offer it for a what? A guilt offering. And then we see a grain offering. What are these offerings that every one of the what offerings are mentioned here? Do I know? Every one of the sin and the mandatory offerings of the sacrificial system. So now he's been readmitted. Okay? He's now been readmitted, and the offerings that are mandatory within the sacrificial system are now being reinstituted on his behalf. What does this mean for him now? Exactly. And now he is now in full fellowship with the living God and with the people. Because remember, you have now that he's going to be engaging in the fellowship offerings, which is going to bring him up to speed. Exactly. He's now a full-fledged member. And now that fellowship with God and man has both been restored now that he is a new creature because of the blood of the sacrifice. And then we pick up here in verse 33. So now the individual has been brought back in. And again, we see a similar imagery in verse 25. And he shall kill the lamb of the guilt offering, and the priest shall take some of the blood of the guilt offering and put it on the lobe of the right ear of him who is to be cleansed, and on the thumb of his right hand, and on his big toe of his right foot. We've seen this again. Why? His whole body has been cleansed, okay? He's back in fellowship. Can you imagine the joy of this individual? I mean, imagine you've been in the wilderness. You've been by yourself. And now you're brought back in. And you're in full fellowship. You're no longer ostracized. You don't have a scarlet letter on. You're a full member.
Not only full-fledged fellowship, but also completely restored. It's a picture of restoration.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. And again, there is no sense of a... and ostracizing you or one of those who have been out. No, there is full fellowship, completely restored as though nothing had happened. Very important that we see this. Very important. And then in verse 33, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, when you come into the land of Canaan, which I give you for possession, and I put a case of leprous disease in a house in the land of your possession, then he who owns the house shall come and tell the priest, there seems to me to be some case of disease in my house. This is important. This is significant. Let's look. Now we're in the wilderness, but what are we looking forward to here? A permanent house. We're looking forward to a permanent house, okay? What Levitical festival does this commemorate? The Feast of Tabernacles, okay? This is significant. The Feast of Tabernacles. And in Jesus' day, during the Feast of Tabernacles, one of the last feasts in the Jewish Levitical calendar, the Jews would descend upon Jerusalem and would live how?
On the
in tents, okay, commemorating the wilderness wanderings. See, dwellings in these tents were very significant. They were a what? This is not overstretching the symbolism here. They were a protection. They were protection. They were a covering. Okay? And as they were in the wilderness, what was the ultimate tent? It was the tabernacle. The tabernacle was indeed a tent. Okay? And it was the dwelling place of God. This is why it looks forward to Christ. Literally, the Word became flesh and what? Dwelt among us, and literally, it's tabernacled. The Word became flesh and tabernacled, tented among us. And so the idea of the wilderness wanderings and commemorating that is commemorating how God was with us while we were in the wilderness. And here we're looking forward again to our permanent home. Our permanent home, okay? And this should, for a Christian today, forces us to look forward to our permanent home. Okay? When we shall be with Him and He shall be our God and we shall be with Him forever in the new creation, the new heaven and the new earth. And so this is looking forward here to when they go into the land of Canaan. And even the land of Canaan is but a foreshadow of the permanent place, the permanent dwelling with God, God's promised land, so to speak. A couple years ago, I did something on the board when we were in the other facility there on Will Clayton. If you go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, and I would challenge you to do this, in the Garden of Eden, and you see the tree in the middle, okay, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you see the structure of the Garden of Eden. What happens to Adam and Eve when they sin? They're cast out, okay? And then what does the Lord give them once they are in the wilderness? He gives them a tabernacle, okay? A tabernacle that's holy with a lampstand there in the middle. And when people sin, they're cast out of that. And then they're brought into a land, okay? A land, and when they sin, they're cast out of that land. And all of the land, okay, the land is ultimately looking to forward to something. What is it? The promised land and the new what? The new Jerusalem. And from where will this new Jerusalem come? Out of heaven. Okay? This is why it does bother me when I hear people, it's not the Holy Land, I mean, but when people talk about how wonderful the physical land of Israel, the physical land of Israel is, as though there's something more spiritual, more significant, more holy about that land in the Middle East right now. We've missed the point if that's the case. Because in the Old Covenant, that land, and land always, demonstrated what? What was land? It was an inheritance. It was real estate, most certainly. And it was an inheritance. And it was the boundaries and the dominion of God's special blessing. And this is important, that it's looking forward for us, the new Jerusalem that will come down out of heaven. And there will be a new creation where all of creation is redeemed and we will dwell with Him in our resurrected bodies. And we're looking forward to this, the day, though, here in Canaan, where even the houses can get leprosy. Now, what would this mean? We've seen it a lot lately. I haven't seen it as much in the past few years, but about 5 years ago. This mold, okay? This is what we're talking about here. It's before insurance companies. And what would happen is, look what it says, though, when you see this. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, can somebody read verse 34? And I'll stop you at a certain point. Can somebody read that?
When you enter the land of Canaan, which I give you for a possession, and I put a mark of leprosy...
Stop right there. Who put it? God. There's an intentionality here. Once again, what do you call it when an automaker ensures that your car will break down? What's that? Planned obsolescence. I never can get that right. Frustrates all of us. What's the purpose of planned obsolescence? It forces us to actually have to pay somebody to get maintenance work on it. It's not necessary, but you see, in the plan of God, there's planned obsolescence. Sorry to be flippant about it. I don't mean to be. I'm reaching for an analogy, but the idea here is God has put this limitation on them, just like He did the leprosy. Don't think it came up out of nowhere. Don't think it's chaos. Don't think it's anything. God is the one who put this mold in your home in order to teach you something about Him and your sufficiency in Him. Now, why would He do it specifically when they got into Canaan?
They don't get pleased with where they are.
They don't get pleased with the land flowing with milk and honey, because you know why? Why is it God's blessing? Every Christian that I know, myself included, wants so much more right now in this life to return to Eden. Do we not? We spend our entire lives trying in the best way that we can to make life as bearable here as possible and to get back into Eden as best we can without realizing that there's what? There's no going back, and there's something what? Much better. I mean, that's the joy and that's the hope. Don't be satisfied with this. Many Christians want to be satisfied with this earth. There's something so much more. Don't be satisfied at all. And this is what He's saying. You're going to go into the promised land, the land that I give you for an inheritance. But guess what? There's something even more. And to prove you, I'm going to put mold in your house. I'm going to put leprosy into your brick home that's so nice, that you're so proud of, that you spent so many years building, that you put your life savings into. And I'm going to put the mold there to make you realize that there's something even better that I have for you. It's God's grace. It's God's grace.
And Brad, is it also looking forward to the fact that we are to examine our own lives?
Most certainly.
All the time, because it's been in
us. Absolutely. Absolutely. There is that constant self-examination that we've seen. I preached on Sunday as well. We're examining ourselves. He says, then I put that case of leprosy in your house. Then he who owns the house shall come and tell the priest. There seems to be me to be some case of disease in my house. Then verse 36, then the priest shall command that they empty the house before the priest goes to examine the disease, lest all that is in the house be declared unclean. And afterward the priest shall go in to see the house, and he shall examine the disease. And if the disease is in the walls of the house with greenish or reddish spots, and if it appears to be deeper than the surface. Is there anything more frustrating when you see something in your house and you realize, oh no, it's in the drywall and it's in the walls? I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Spots, and if it appears to be deeper than the surface, then the priest shall go out of the house to the door of the house and shut up the house 7 days. Interesting. And the priest shall come again on the seventh day and look. If the disease has spread in the walls of the house, then the priest shall command that they take out the stones in which is the disease and throw them into an unclean place outside the city. And he shall have the inside of the house scraped all around, and the plaster that they scrape off they shall pour out in the unclean place outside the city. Then they shall take the other stones and put them in the place of those stones, and he shall take other plaster and plaster the house. Verse 43, if the disease breaks out again in the house, after he has taken out the stones and scraped the house and plastered it, then the priest shall go and look, and if the disease has spread in the house, it is a persistent leprous disease in the house, it is unclean. And what happens if it's unclean? And he shall break down the house, its stones and timber and all the plaster in the house, and he shall carry them out of the city to an unclean place. Moreover, verse 46, whoever enters the house while it is shut up shall be unclean until the evening, and whoever sleeps in the house shall wash his clothes, and whoever eats in the house shall wash his clothes. We see here that even inanimate objects are deemed unclean in the Levitical law. Why is that? Why is that? All creation. Thank you. All creation. Something I personally have been learning, especially more and more as I prepare for Easter Sunday sermon, I'm seeing that Christ came to redeem not just your spirit and your soul, but what? your flesh and all of creation. This is something I have never heard preached on. I've preached on rarely, and the more and more I look at the totality of Scripture, this is what's going on. That in the fall in the garden, when Adam and Eve sinned, what entered into all of creation? Sin. So we get the thorns and everything. It's as though creation is at war with itself. I love R.C. Sproul one time gave an analogy of going into the woods. He says, every time I go into the woods, it's what? It's dark. Is that what you said? Yeah, and it's what? You can't hear a thing. Why? What happens? You as a human being walk into the woods and you know there's deer there. You know maybe if you're in the West there's bear. You know there's animals of all kinds. You as one human being walk into the woods and it's absolutely what? Quiet. Silent. Why? They hear you and there's enmity in creation. There's enmity built into creation because of sin. And this is why we see this beautiful picture at that restored creation when the lion lays down with the lamb, the boy plays by the hole of the cobra. There is at once peace, okay? And we're still, in a sense, looking forward to that. We see that now in the sense that we as human beings and our nature left alone are at what with God? We are at enmity with God. But we have peace now with God because our natures have been changed through Christ. And one day there will be peace and harmony throughout all of creation because all of the created order will be perfectly restored and given to the Father, to the glory of the Father, by the Son, through the power of the Holy Spirit. And so we see here that even their homes, even the places where they live, even inanimate objects, all of creation is fallen and will be restored and will be cleansed. It's looking forward to that day when our dwelling will be with Him. Anything else? Any comments or questions? Yes, ma'am.
I think doesn't 57 kind of sum it up? You know, it says that all these laws were given to teach when they were unclean and when they are clean.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you. Show the distinction. There is a distinction between being clean and unclean. And it is God who determines which is which. Cameron.
Now that picture of, go back to the guy who shaves his eyebrows.
Yes.
That new life is so appropriate when you think that there really is no record of anyone having going, we don't have the record in the text, of someone going to the priest and having this happen until Christ comes, heals the lepers, and sends them back to the priest and says, go tell them what happened to you. It should have told them the miracle had happened. It had never happened in the history of Israel. And the whole thing is pointing to Christ. Here he is. That picture just blows me away.
That's a terrific point there, Cameron, because we don't see anyone ever being cleansed of leprosy until Christ comes on the scene. He is the only one who can do it because He Himself is God.
It's a miracle.
And it's a miracle. Well, I'm sorry. We don't see... What's that?
No Jewish.
So we don't see what Christ is doing. You're right, and forgive me here. Whoa, Earl, you're going to speak up. I forgive me here. There are a few times in the Old Testament that we see this, but in Christ he specifically seeks out the lepers, and you can see it here. We didn't go over it in the New Testament references in your notes. Specifically seeks out the lepers to demonstrate the fulfillment of this. And exactly. When Christ says, go and show yourself to the priest, the idea is that, what? The Messiah has come. The fulfillment of this has come.
Well, you know, even Mary was cleansed of leprosy to show, you know, to point through that there was, you know, that people were cleansed.
Yes.
Even Naaman, you know, the Gentile.
Even Moses. The hand. Yeah, absolutely. So... Absolutely. Anything else? Does Joshua have anything to say? So peaceful. Man. Anything else? Yes, sir.
I picture in my mind when Christ is sleeping in the boat and the waves were coming up. up and it's really storming. And when he wakes up and he says, peace, it's like even nature doesn't have a problem with him. There's no enmity between.
It's a great, it's beautiful. Yeah.
The thing is, the enemy is the wind.
Huh.
And he's peace between him.
The human mind cannot comprehend what the new created order will be like. We just can't. I think in our minds, do we not, and I say this in preparation for Easter, in our minds it seems easier and even superior to think of our eternal existence as a purely spiritual one, doesn't it? It really does, at least for me. I mean, if I had my ways and I would just, you know, define it, it would be as Plato did, and me be free from this body and just be united with God in spirit, and that's it. But that's not his plan. And the reason we don't like that is because our minds cannot wrap around what that will be like with resurrected bodies and a new heaven and a new earth that will be glorified and will be perfect. We can't see it. And the only thing that we can think of and the only point of comparison is the best time that we've ever had in this physical earth, which still involves limitations, pain, and suffering. Yet our minds can't comprehend that one day when our bodies will be perfect. Yeah. So, but that's a good point, though. Even creation doesn't have a problem with them. It's at peace with them. Huh. Anything else? Somebody close this in prayer.